Welcome to episode 248 of the Active Photographer Podcast, your behind-the-scenes glimpse into the day-to-day life of a working professional photographer, with me, Giles Babbage. When it comes to deciding which images make the cut or not before being supplied to clients, well, this can be something of a grey area. And in many ways, this crucial element in the chain of actions is often treated like something of an afterthought, and really not given the attention it deserves. In this week's show then, I'm talking about the process of making picture selections, and I'm using the real-world example of one of my recent magazine features. So welcome, one and all, to The Active Photographer, episode 248! It is just about 25 past four on a Monday afternoon. And once again, I am in my office. Now, I know I said in the past few weeks that I wanted to be bringing you more recordings from out in the field, but to save you the full story, there's been some stuff going on, family issues, which mean that I've had to kind of stay at base and not be out and about so much. Anyway, not going to dwell on that. We are going to talk today about this idea of picture editing, not the physical editing of pictures in Photoshop or whatever program, but the process of actually selecting a picture out of a range of pictures. Perhaps we should talk in terms of picture selection in that case. And the starting point, the impetus for this really is something that I was watching on television recently, along with some tutorials, some workshops that I'm working on to bring out for other professionals to help them along their way. Now, here's the thing. As a photographer, as I'm sure many of you know, it's not just about taking the pictures. It's not just about pressing the button because you're there in front of the subject or the landscape or whatever it might be. It's about making an educated decision as to how you're going to capture the image. But then what happens to that image after the fact, after the editing, the picture editing has done, or at the stage of physically editing the picture to make sure the levels and the colours and everything are right? What happens at that point is so important, because if you pick the wrong picture, it can have quite a profound effect. Now, a sort of a running irony I've always thought, and I know other photographers have found the same thing, is that you could set up a selection of, say, for argument's sake, five pictures in front of a client and say, which one would you like or which two would you like? And nine times out of ten, those people are going to pick, for example, picture two out of the series. And you know that actually, as a photographer, as an image maker, as someone, as I do, someone that's been shooting for a good while now, you know that actually, for the purpose that they're talking about, the photograph working for them, doing what it's intended to do, you might think, do you know what, that's not the best picture for that. It's number four or number five or whatever. And so here's the thing. I was watching a program the other evening called Master of Photography. It's a Sky Arts program. And I've got the websites up in front of me here. And just to read you the little bit, a very brief bit that appears here, it says, 12 photographers from across Europe will be selected to compete in a range of tasks to become the next Sky Arts Master of Photography. Now, I think I'm right in saying that some, but not all, could be all, I'm a little bit, my mind's gone blank on this, they are claiming to be photographers in different fields. There are people that are, say, war photographers, those that are sort of photojournalists, art photographers, what have you. And this is by no means a slur or a an underhand dig at other photographers. It's not at all. But I've been sat there. I've watched the first few episodes, and one of the biggest things that these photographers, not all, but a good majority of them, fall down on is they don't know how to edit, or rather they don't know how to select the pictures that do the right thing. Now, the caveat here is, of course, they are shooting to impress the judges, and they're also selecting images, I suppose, which they think will impress the judges, but they're also doing the kind of the art photographer thing, getting quite precious, quite attached to their pictures. I know how it goes. I studied for 3 years on a photography degree program. It's quite a bizarre situation. It's kind of ruthless as well when you have to justify your work, and it is very easy to get very emotionally attached, a bit charged about your pictures. A lot of people don't like criticism. Even if it's very positive criticism, they see it as criticism is in the negative sense. But I was sat there, and I was saying to my wife, who is not a photographer, she is visually aware, she's a creative person, I said, is it just me, or are they just not they don't have the awareness to select the strongest pictures within the set for whatever reason? There was one shot the other evening where this guy had shot a really, really nice shot. It was an unusual angle. There was lots of colour. There was lots of sort of bold shapes and lines and this sort of thing going on. And it was a really strong, nice picture. And what he did was, and the colour was an integral part of this picture. It was that the setting was, I think it was like in a circus type setting. It was like a really key element to what made this picture or the set of pictures. And so what he did, he decided to turn it black and white, up the contrast. And yes, it did bring out the, you know, all those lines and what have you. That was his creative decision. I appreciate that. But I said to my wife, that is just what, why has he decided to do that? Now, by no means am I always right. I'm more than happy to admit that. But then when I heard these judges, who themselves are photographers and well-known photographers in their own rights, when they said, do you know what? Why have you taken the colour out of these pictures? I kind of thought, okay, so maybe I kind of do know a thing or two about this. And it was as if this guy didn't really know why he'd done it. And like I say, this is not a slur on individuals or anything like this. This is a very general discussion, if you like, about the picture editing and selection process. And this is something that, as a photographer, you have to be very keen on. You have to be very aware that you are making the right picture selections for the given output. So, for example, if I'm shooting portraits, and I might say to a client, okay, well, look, you don't want to sift through 50 pictures. What I'm going to do is I'm going to throw the proofs up for you to have a look. And, you know, you say that you only need, say, 3 pictures. That's fine. Just pick out 5. And that kind of forces them to kind of really think about, you know, which picture do they think shows them off best. And, you know, I might say, well, okay, that's fine, but how about this one as well? Do you think, personally, I think you look more approachable in this one, or whatever. It's a two-way thing. But, you know, there are other occasions where if I'm shooting pictures, say, from magazine feature, and I might send a selection of, say, 20 pictures, knowing that somewhere in the region of 10 to 15 maybe will be used. If it's a big enough feature, that would usually go to, well, it depends on the magazine, but a typical example, it might be a 6-page feature. with a few thousand words. I have to be really, really hot on it, really critical of my work. And it's very difficult to narrow down. And it's the same with, if you are, as I have been recently, selecting pictures for a website, say a portfolio gallery, or maybe if you are, I don't know, putting on an exhibition. Let me give you an example. I have Adobe Bridge set up in front of me here, and I have all of the raw, unedited pictures from a recent trip I made up to the Peak District. That was for a magazine feature for Camping magazine. The feature, the pictures have been selected. They're due to come out in, it's all coming out in a month or so, I believe. I don't know which pictures they are going to use. I might, let me just see. I probably should have thought this through. Okay. So I have got here a folder with 25 pictures. I think it actually was 26 in the end, but 25 pictures, which were the final selection of images which I sent through. And looking at Adobe Bridge, I had a total of 794 pictures from a week-long trip. And I had to narrow down, so basically virtually 800 pictures down to 25 or 26. Now, granted, there are some pictures in there because it was a family camping trip. There were some family pictures, stuff that was never intended to be put in a feature. There are some shots which I took specifically. This has got my pictures shot on my phone as well as shots from my DSLR. So there are pictures, there's a real mix in here, stuff which was intended only to go on, say, Instagram or as a blog illustration, like I say, family pictures, all this sort of thing. But what I thought I'd do is I'd pick out maybe a handful of pictures where there were sort of two or three or more options within that selection that I would have to decide which one was the best one to submit. And then I will maybe give you my reasoning as to why I made the choice I did. Now, one other thing that I will just say is I've got a selection of books next to me here, which I will link to all of these in the show notes. I don't know whether they are all still within print, but no doubt you will be able to get them through Amazon, eBay, abebooks.co.uk or .com, you know, for a matter of just a few pounds or, you know, pennies or whatever it might be. There are three books, and I've had these for a very long time. So the first one, and this applies to anyone who is selecting pictures to tell a story, which as photographers, essentially, we always do. There is a slight, as you will hear, there is a slight bias towards maybe kind of editorial pictures. So magazines or nowadays, I suppose you talk about online magazines, websites. But the fundamentals, the basis behind this all is all just about knowing how to pick out the right pictures for the job at hand. So the first book here, which was originally published, let's have a look here. It was originally published in 1996. This edition was 2000, so 17 years ago, but you know, the technology might have changed, but the technique, as it were, is still there. The message is there. It's by a guy called Tom Ang, which a lot of you, I'm sure you'll be familiar with his books, and it's called Picture Editing, second edition. And it's, yeah, it talks about, you know, sort of issues of the time, I suppose, a bit more a given now. But let me just read you a bit off the back here. I won't dwell too much on these, but Picture editing provides a thorough grounding in the art and discipline of picture editing and picture management. Tom Ang discusses the varied context in which picture editing operates, including the thorny subject of image manipulation, still quite relevant, and provides a framework for understanding picture editing as a many-stranded and complex task. This new edition combines detailed descriptions of the latest techniques and technology involved with checklists, glossary and exercises to help the student or trainee. It's illustrated with many photographs, including over 40 cover photographs in the plate selection. It's a good book. It has, you know, grab shots of newspaper sort of front pages, all this sort of thing. And it talks to you about sort of... just randomly, I've picked up here on page 93, self-editing. It's widely recognized that photographers do not make their own best editors, even if they are perceptive picture editors of the work of others. And it gives reasons, talking about pre-visualization, emotional attachment, which is a huge thing. If you think a particular shot is the best one, it may not be the most objective way to look at the picture. Not seen with fresh eyes, and the exact use not known. It says here, the photographer may not have an idea of exactly what the picture desk wants to find, or exactly what is needed to fill a certain gap. So that book, well worth looking. Like I say, don't worry if you didn't make a note of these, or if you're driving or whatever. I will be linking to these in the show notes. The second one, I think have I had this one a bit longer? This is also from the year 2000, and it is by a guy called Kenneth Cobray. It's the fourth edition. It was the 20th anniversary. It's a Focal Press book, Photojournalism, the Professional's Approach. And again, very similar. I've just skipped past a particular picture. It talks about, you know, sort of framing and how framing makes a difference. There's a picture here of it's an airport, a picture of the control tower, shot from in the control tower, sort of a pretty wide angle view. Let's see if this is relevant. There are three shots. One is super wide, one is quite wide, and the other is a bit closer, but they all show some of the control panel, the airfields outside and the horizon and what have you. You know, cropping makes a huge difference. The expression on people's faces can change the message. And, you know, you have to think about how, as best you can, how these pictures are going to be used. Do they say the right thing? All that sort of thing. Oh, there we go. Let's just drop the third book on the floor. And here we go. Now, those of you that remember the podcasts that I used to do with Hugh Graham, sadly passed away, but he was a photojournalist. He was one of my lecturers at university, subsequently became a colleague as well as a friend. One of the books that he recommended to me, I think I borrowed from him. I never actually bought a copy, and then picked one up for, I think, a couple of pounds in a charity shop. I think just last year, actually. Such a well-known book within these circles. It is from the year 1978. Okay, so it's older actually than I am by 1 year. That'll tell you my age. And it is just packed full of photography that tells a message. It's called Pictures on a Page, Photojournalism, Graphics and Picture Editing. Now, 1978, pre-digital, so when they talk about editing, we're not talking about Photoshop and levels and all this sort of thing. It's the core of messages within pictures. I won't read you what's on the back of it, because it would, you know, take up a bit too much time. But again, it's, you know, there's a shot here of a model, for example, where there are four shots showing similar crop, slightly wider, slightly closer, but her expression and where her hand is placed, sort of at the side of her head or down by her leg or what have you, changes. And it does shift the balance, the feel, the message of the pictures. And there's some sort of famous pictures here with Roger Bannister and the 4-minute mile, and very famous picture here by Cartier-Bresson. You know, there's some really, really good references in there. I will link to that in the show notes as well. So let's just look at a selection of pictures which I shot for a magazine feature. So often when I'm doing a piece based on a particular campsite that I went to, I have to show a nice clear picture of the campsite. And again, it's, you know, you think, what do I want to show? What do I want to omit? And I wanted to show, you know, a fair representation. But there's a shot here where the first shot in the sequence, first shot in the sequence is, you know, it's a lovely blue sky, green grass, quite wide to show the fence around the field here, the field beyond, the trees beyond that, the woodland. And so the tent that we used only takes up just, well, a third, maybe a quarter of the image, and it shows some other tents in the background. The second and shot shows a bit more of the tent, blocks off more of the frame. You know, and there's a range, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 shots, very, very similar. Now, when it came to the actual final picture, see if I can remember, bear with me, because of course, cleverly, what I've done is I have changed the, I've changed the file names. Where are we? There we go. And do you know what? I didn't use any of those pictures. What I did, I used a picture that was from later in the week, which showed a completely different angle, because I wanted to show in the far background, I wanted to show like the shower block and the approach road. And there was a gate leading to a field which is very popular with walkers, because I'd spoken about it being good access to the hills for people that liked walking. So I ditched the initial, in my selection, ditched the initial picture that I thought I'd use in favour of one that linked in better with the story. Still very nice blue sky, puffy white clouds, but it shows more of what it illustrates more of what the story was talking about it has the we had electric hookups, so you can see that in the back behind the tent there. You can see the tent, you can see the shower block facilities with washing facilities and laundry room. That's all there, so it ties in much better. Let me see. Okay, one of my, and again, this is where, you know, talking about getting attached to pictures, one of my favourite shots from the whole trip was shot into the light. And let me just check. So 3898. There we go. 3898. Okay, so I can see it within the context of all the pictures that I shot. Derbyshire, the Peak District. Big open vistas, hills, flat ground as well, very traditional stone walls, farmers' fields, all this sort of thing. Wanted to get a shot that just showed the beauty of this landscape, because that's what is a big draw for the Peak District for people. But as we're driving through, we'd had a busy day, and I just had to stop because I saw the light breaking through a tree here, and there's flowers in the foreground and the hills in the mid distance and beyond. But shooting into the light with the sun breaking through this tree, shot at F16, for what it's worth, ISO 400, F16, 200th of a second. And because F16, those sort of smaller apertures, you get a starburst effect when you're working with, for example, floodlights. Similar thing with the sun, you get the flare, but it accentuates that. There's a slight bleaching in the sky, which was nice, but still that rich blue. This shot just kind of epitomized along with another couple of shots, which I also included, that were not featuring that tree. They showed a long sweeping road going off into the distance. But this shot in particular, I got quite attached to. And again, trying to second guess the, you know, the production process of the magazine, it would fit very nicely to, if not a double page spread, because these particular features don't typically open with a full double page, but often you get a sort of like a two thirds or almost two thirds. It's got the space, the balance is right. It's got space to put text in there. It's a beautiful landscape. It just does the right thing. I will be very interested to see whether it ends up being a lead picture, or as I said early on, is it just that the magazine, the production team thinks, oh, it's a nice picture, we'll put it in there as like a I know, sort of like 3-inch little you know, tiny picture saying, oh, lovely Derbyshire countryside, because I've captioned all these as well. But there again, you see, I had a selection of shots. They were all shot on a Nikon 20mm wide-angle lens. Varying perspective, I went up a bit, down a bit, show more of the plants in the foreground. Could be interesting. We shall see. Let's see, maybe just time for maybe one more. Okay, so which was the one that I used here? There. Okay, so part of the trip, we went to a cavern, which we actually walked 1,000 feet through into the depths of, 100 feet underground into this like cavern. It's all kind of lit these days with LED lights, and of course they throw a bit of color around there to make it a bit more interesting. Back in the day, there was, as you go back in time, you know, they used gas lights, and before that, just candle lights. And again, I was talking about the atmosphere, the feel of the tour, some of the history that we were told about. So I needed a picture that really kind of did the right thing. Now, just looking at my selection, or rather the pictures that I took, just to give you an idea. 4, 8, 12, 16, 24, 8, 28, about 30, 31 pictures, something like that. Maybe 34 pictures. I didn't shoot loads, and actually they were all shot on my Nikon camera, just because low lights, the you know, DSLR, it's better at handling the low light than my iPhone. iPhone would have been very convenient, but I wanted the quality control that you get with a better camera. But again, it was the important thing here was to show the scale. It was to show that there was a group of people walking along, but it was to show the scale and the atmosphere within this, you know, lost world, as it were, under the ground. And the picture that I selected here, you know, it was quite early on. It's not the best picture. It's quite a noisy picture because it was shot at, now, on Nikon, it would be the high one or high three setting, I think. It equates to 25,600, really, really pushing it as far as I could. F4, 30th of a second, handheld. Because of the pace of the tour, there wasn't the chance to actually set up a tripod or anything, and I didn't take a monopod, and there was nowhere really for me to rest the camera. But once I'd actually worked that picture, it actually looked fine, and it's not going to be a lead picture. I know it's not. So it's going to be small enough that I know the quality of the prints, like the paper stock that the magazine used. It's going to be enough that I know it's going to hold up. But there were these 30 odd pictures that I had to choose from, and I selected two pictures actually. I selected the group one, and then, let me just see if I can find the another one. Where is it? There we go. So I selected the group one, and I selected another one, which was a wider shot, basically the same settings, except for it was f6.3. It showed some people more in the middle distance, some of the light. Even at f6.3, you're getting the starburst effect from one of the lights that was down there, but it shows some stalagmites coming up, pointing up into the air there. But it gives the editor, it gives the production guys options with what they want to run in the feature. But this whole process, and then what I tend to do is I ask other people to see the pictures and say, what do you think? Do you think this is the best option? There is also this one. Do you think that's a better option? Not in terms of technical quality of the picture, but in terms of what the picture says in the context of what I'm trying to illustrate within the words of my feature. Now, I'm going to leave it at that because I don't want this recording to drag on. We're already at about half an hour. But hopefully you can see that whether you're shooting pictures for, say, a newspaper, or whether you're shooting for a magazine feature, or whether you're, you know, you have a range of pictures that you are having to make a selection for your website, where you can't have, unless you want to show a panel of, say, two or three pictures, you can't have too much repetition. You need to have standalone images. You can see that you have to be really ruthless. And I actually, in my first day of the process, when I came to look at these pictures, starting off at just under 800 pictures, I narrowed it down to, was it about a 75 or something? And then from that, I got down to about 20, I think about 31 or something. And then I made the final little tweaks to the selection, which got me down to 25, 26. So you have to be really ruthless. And it didn't take that long because I just, you know, I've done it for long enough that I can look at a picture and think, oh, I really like that, but it's just not the right picture for the output. And that's the difference with pictures that, you know, maybe lovely pictures, and the photographer is very talented, technically everything is bang on, but they just don't do it for the audience. And that's the difference between often with people that are maybe shooting as a career, like earning money from your camera, or just exhibiting. You know, different audiences want to see different things. Some audiences, maybe like if you're a member of a camera club, you may find that what are your most successful pictures in competitions are the ones that actually, yes, you do really like, because you know that you're on maybe a subconscious level, your fellow photographer club members, they're striving for the most technically proficient pictures as well. So they, what's important to them as well as the subject matter, is that they really attach a lot of value to the technical skill proficiency of the photography that they are looking at. Now, just to finish off, if you're shooting to impress judges, you can play the system a bit. You know, there's an ongoing joke. You know, I gave a presentation to a camera club last year, and I remember saying to the group there, I said, yeah, when I was a member of a camera club when I was about 15, there was just this ongoing thing where if you want to please the judges, do things in threes. So, for example, if you've got people walking along a beach and they're in silhouette against the sunset, make sure there are three people. And gave a couple of other examples. And I said to them, I said, tongue in cheek, I said, is that still the case? And they said, yeah, absolutely. Judges really like things in threes. So, you know, you can play the system. You can second guess. I know with different magazines, because I've looked at the magazines, done my research, I know the sort of pictures that they are going to want. That in turn, that puts your hit rate up and saves you time in the long run, because you are shooting the pictures to begin with, which you know are going to do the job better. But you just need to be very aware that whilst you may have a set of stunning pictures, that doesn't always cut it. You just have to be ruthless and think about the content, because content is king, and that content has to match the output. And that output is of course relevant to the intended audience. So, like I say, all the things I've talked about will be linked in the show notes. As ever, if you've got any questions, you can always ask me, whether it's about picture selection, the kit I use, the magazines I shoot for, all this sort of thing. You're more than welcome to ask. That's what I'm here for. So, of course, just ask away and I will get on your questions and give you your answers. But for now, I will leave it there. As you'd expect, I'll be sure to keep you in the loop when the feature in question hits the shelves. You can check out all the show notes to this and other week's shows at theactivephotographer.com. If you'd like to get in touch directly, don't forget I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Giles Babbage. There's the Facebook page, facebook.com/theactivephotographer. Or, of course, send me a good old-fashioned email, giles@theactivephotographer.com. So thanks for listening, everyone. Take care, have a great week, and I will speak to you all very soon.